it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
Good evening. You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinky, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm here to give my insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. In addition to listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on WGY.com. Visit our show's site at TullyRinkyShow.com for podcasts of previous shows. Joining me as co-host tonight is family and matrimonial law partner at Tully Rinky, Barbara King. Our topic tonight is one that has likely been on our listeners' minds lately, bankruptcy. Our guest for tonight is bankruptcy attorney Paula Barbarullo. Paula practices out of her firm in Latham and has been contributing to the practice of law in the Capital Region for over 15 years. With Paula tonight, we're going to take a look at the economic climate that has created this storm of bankruptcies, what you should consider before filing for bankruptcy, and how to reestablish your credit after filing bankruptcy. Also with us tonight is Val. Chris is off tonight. If you have any questions for us throughout the show, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or press star WGY on your cell phone. Well, we've all seen, I think, an increase in the filing of bankruptcies, especially as the economic situation deteriorates. Paula, are you seeing a spike in the number of bankruptcies that are being filed?
Well, I'm seeing a spike in the number of people who are contacting our office and actually coming in to see us. We have been pretty consistent with the number of filings, and the number of filings are up from where they were last year. I think part of the problem with clients who come to see us, the economic climate is such that even though they need bankruptcy, they sometimes aren't able to get the information together or, quite frankly, the costs affiliated with the bankruptcy right away.
Now, do you believe that there's more people contacting you because of what's going on with the stock market, or do you believe it's because we're in a recession? What are the factors that are playing into all this?
Well, I think the economy is in the toilet, frankly. We are seeing a number of reasons why people are filing. The triggers we generally see are usually life-changing events. Such as foreclosures. We are seeing a number of people who are behind on their mortgage payments, many of whom are already in the foreclosure process. Many of them have an inability to juggle their debt. Most people who come to see us have large balances on their credit cards, and while previously they'd been able to make the minimum payments, when gas goes over $3 a gallon and your grocery bill increases as a result of those high fuel costs, something has to give, and what gives is the credit card payments.
Now, Paula, as you know, a lot of people going through divorce have these economic problems. Sometimes it's part of what's causing the divorce. Are you seeing couples filing together, filing separately?
Both. I am seeing an increase in couples who come to see me separately without their spouse because the expenses and income are generally part of the problem as to why they're having marital problems. So one will come to see us without the other to see what their rights may be if a subsequent divorce action is commenced.
Paula, could you fill me in on what exactly the goal of bankruptcy is for somebody in trouble?
Well, it depends on what the trigger is. The general goal of any bankruptcy is a discharge of your debts. However, that's not necessarily the main goal of some people. For example, if the home is in foreclosure, filing a bankruptcy will stop the foreclosure temporarily or could permanently stop the foreclosure if the debtor, and the debtor is the legal term given to somebody who files for bankruptcy, if the debtor is able to enter into a repayment plan and cure their arrears in the mortgage, that presumes that they'll be able to make the payments going forward. That's called post-petition or post-filing. The main goal of a bankruptcy filing, I think, is relief. Relief from debts, relief from phone calls, relief from lawsuits, relief from collections on judgments.
Is this a short process?
Depends. It depends on which chapter is filed. There are two different chapters under the bankruptcy code for consumers, Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. Chapter 7, about 4 to 6 month time frame. Chapter 13 longer because that's a repayment plan. It's repayment schedule anywhere between 3 to 5 years.
When you say discharge of debts, just to explain it to the listener, my understanding is you basically walk away from your creditors, from the people you owe money to. Is that what you're describing?
Yes, with some caveats. There are certain debts that are not dischargeable. You've got three tiers of debts in bankruptcy. You have secured debts. A secured debt is anything that has collateral attached, like a mortgage or a car loan. Then you have unsecured priority debt. Priority debt, for example, is tax debt, whether it's to the real property taxes for homes or income taxes to the IRS or the state. And then you have your general unsecured debt. General unsecured creditors are credit card companies, banks who give personal loans, anything that doesn't have collateral attached to it.
You mean something they can take back?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So the discharge, generally speaking, discharges unsecured debts. Secured debts are not discharged if you want to keep the collateral, because you can do that. You can reaffirm.
So if I want to keep my car, I have to agree to pay the loan back and also pay back however far I may be behind in that loan?
Yes, depending upon which chapter. But if you want to keep any collateral, car or house, even in bankruptcy, you must continue to pay that creditor.
Now, I know a lot of people are hearing about the bailout on Wall Street, and I think that's making a lot of people very infuriated that here we have these big companies that took these risks and they reaped tremendous rewards during the boom day, and now they're being bailed out. And here we have, you know, I guess as John McCain says, Joe the plumber, he's stuck with, you know, basically these debts. I mean, it doesn't really strike me as very fair as we're bailing out, you know, Wall Street. And meanwhile, Joe the plumber, he's stuck. He's got to file bankruptcy. Is there any other options other than filing bankruptcy?
Sure. There are other options. What I tell clients who come to see me is that I'm a last resort. As far as I'm concerned, I'm a last resort. A bankruptcy attorney, I think, is a last resort. There are agencies such as Consumer credit counseling agencies that will help individuals with repayment plans to their creditors. The problem with those types of organizations is that the credit card companies set the rules on how much they'll be willing to reduce their interest and how much they'll be willing to reduce their monthly payments. And oftentimes people just cannot afford those payments. And some of the things I see when clients come to me after already going to one of those organizations is they'll show me the sheet and they'll say, well, look, my minimum payments each month are less than the payments that they're going to require me to pay back. It doesn't seem fair. I wouldn't have gone there if that were the case. I can't make my minimum payments. And what I explain to the clients is that your minimum payments do not get you out of debt within 5 years like these payment plans are designed to do. That's why it's higher. So in 5 years, you'll be out of debt. However, most people can't afford that amount of money, so they end up coming to see us. And with respect to the bailout bill, one of the things that was very disappointing to me, besides the irony of a lot of these people losing their homes to these lenders in foreclosure, and then now they're paying out of their own pocket with tax dollars to bail these companies out, but we'll leave the irony there for a moment, is that there was some discussion of making mortgages somewhat adjustable by bankruptcy judges, and that was not actually part of the bailout bill when it was all said and done.
Now, isn't this also the anniversary of a major change in the bankruptcy code? I think it's, what, 3 years now?
Yes, October 17, 2005, which is a date that is emblazoned on the brain of every bankruptcy attorney that I know.
What was the major change in the code?
Oh, there were major changes to the bankruptcy code. It was a sweeping change. A couple of the changes that did not exist before is one is a requirement for bankruptcy credit counseling. It's an absolute prerequisite to filing any bankruptcy. If you do not obtain the bankruptcy credit counseling before filing, your case is dismissed, which is a harsh consequence because there are prohibitions against multiple filings.
Now, I have a question for you, Paula. What is the typical person who comes in to see you? I mean, the way I had always envisioned people who file bankruptcy were people that were kind of irresponsible with credit cards and, you know, had a I guess, a room filled with shoes and, you know, the BMW in the driveway, and they just kept buying things they couldn't afford. Now, I guess my view here could be a little skewed. What exactly is the typical person? I mean, are they coming in because of problems with employment? Do they come in problems with illness? What exactly is the typical person that does file for bankruptcy?
Have you ever practiced in the area of bankruptcy law?
I have not.
Okay, so your opinion was based on what?
My opinion is actually based on just on my, you know, having gone through school and talked to, you know, the classmates and having talked to people who filed from bankruptcy.
Well, I can tell you that there is no typical bankruptcy debtor, and I can tell you that in over 15 years of practicing law, I have never had anybody walk through my doors who's actually abused the system. That is a fundamental misconception, and it was one of the major factors that legislators used in trying to sell the change in the bankruptcy code. And it worked. It worked. I believe the soundbite was that bankruptcy costs every household $400. We weren't able to, when I say we, I'm talking about National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, we weren't able to determine where that figure came from. But what I can tell you is that there is not a typical bankruptcy client, whereas in the past we were seeing people, either single mothers or people who have just recently lost their job or divorce, but now people making six-figure incomes are walking through our door.
We'd like to hear from you tonight. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. If you have a question but you can't join us tonight, don't forget that we can be reached all week at the Tully Rinke office at 518-218-7100. When we're back, we'll find out what Paula's number one piece of advice is for those considering bankruptcy.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, portfolio manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions. Online at integral1.net. That's integral1.net. 464-4014.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but first-rate funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable-rate mortgage, first-rate funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First-rate funding, New Corner Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Greg Rinke, and tonight I'm joined by family and matrimonial law partner at Tully Rinke, Barbara King. Our special guest tonight is bankruptcy attorney Paula Barbarullo. And here to help us break everything down is Val. If you hear something you want to give your opinion on, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. Feel free to check us online anytime at Tully Rinke at TullyLegal.com. Before the break, we had said that Paula was going to share with you all her number one piece of information. So, Paula, I'm going to turn it over to you for your number one piece of information before filing for divorce.
Or bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy.
My advice is do not raid your 401k or your retirement program until you talk to either a credit counselor or a bankruptcy attorney. There are certain assets in bankruptcy which are exempt from the reach of creditors, and a retirement is one of them. So many people get to me, and yes, I'm a last resort, but they use me as a last resort and don't come to me before considering filing bankruptcy. And by the time they get to me, their 401ks are already raided. They've already taken a second or third mortgage out, or taken out another type of personal loan to pay debt, and yet still can't make ends meet. So do not touch your 401k unless you have an absolute need to do so. One of the things we were discussing earlier were the changes in the bankruptcy code, and I want to get back to that because one of the major changes in the code is what's called a means test.
Before we get to the means test, we have a caller. We have George from Monticello who has a question about bankruptcy policy. George, you're on the air.
Oh, thanks. You know, I heard, I don't know your name, miss, but you said about George Bush initiating the act for people causing fraud in bankruptcy, and that was one of the reasons why it passed.
Do you have a question?
Yeah. Being that I'm a taxpayer, now they were bailing out the same banks that wanted to take us to court for filing bankruptcy or not paying the credit back. I'd like to, you know...
Well, what I can,
my question is, that wasn't fair.
I tend to agree with you, but I think that with respect to the economic bailout bill, I think that legislators believed that there was something that needed to be done fast. But
I'd like to go down and punch out a banker and hire you to keep me out of jail.
Well, unfortunately, I don't practice in the area of criminal law. So
call Greg for that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's the point I want to make. I'm glad that you brought it to people's attention. And I don't think American citizens should stand for this. I don't want to pay these guys anything. I mean, a lot of people lost money with their 401ks. I feel sorry for them.
So do I. Yeah, I agree with a lot of your points.
I really feel sorry for them. I have like three or four guys that I work with that, I lost $150,000. I lost $35,000. I feel bad for them, but, you know.
I agree, and that's one of the reasons why I say whatever you have left in your 401k, don't touch it to pay off your unsecured debt. Get to a bankruptcy attorney.
What scares me is that a lot of people that deal with stocks aren't really being upfront. You know, the big thing when it started was, you'll be safe, diversify. When everything across the board is down, they're jiving people. You know, the guys that try to sell stocks are still jiving people.
Well, I think you make
the board is losing.
George, I think you make a lot of good points, and thanks for the call tonight.
Thank you.
Good luck.
So we were going to talk a little bit about the means test. Paula, what exactly is the means test? I mean, that is very critical, I know, to bankruptcy law. But what exactly is the means test? What do we need to know about?
Well, when the bankruptcy code changed, there was a requirement to determine somebody's current monthly income and then compare it with the median income for, in this instance, for the state of New York, for however many people are in the household. And if your income was over the median income for the state of New York for that many people in a household, then you were deemed to have presumed to be abusing the system if you file a Chapter 7, and then therefore there was a long formula that we need to do to determine if somebody passes the means test or doesn't pass the means test. And if you don't pass the means test, and I'm being very simple about this because it's a very complicated formula, then if you don't pass the means test, then you're required to pay your creditors back a certain amount of money, whatever the bottom line of this formula is, over a period of 5 years. If you do pass the means test, then the presumption of abuse has been rebutted, and then you can determine whether you need to file a Chapter 7 versus a Chapter 13.
Now, bankruptcy law, with filing a bankruptcy, are you able to do this on your own? Do you need an attorney to file bankruptcy, and do you recommend you have an attorney?
You do not need to use an attorney to file bankruptcy, but because it is such a complicated procedure, I would not suggest that anybody attempt to file bankruptcy on their own, especially if their income level is over the median income. There's just no way for a layperson to understand how to do this formula, even looking at examples and instructions on how to do it.
Now, Paula, I have people that come to me thinking about divorce or separation, and more they have spouses or they themselves have money perhaps in stock options, 401ks, things of that nature. And I'm finding that they have to not just do separation planning, but bankruptcy planning also. For example, I've got a woman whose husband has a business. He's going to have to buy her out of the business. He's got a 401k. He's got to pay child support. And she's worried that he won't be able to do all of this. What can you offer people going through divorces in terms of some general advice for these issues? Child support, businesses, things like that.
Well, child support, maintenance, domestic support obligations. Spousal support. The term domestic support obligation is in the bankruptcy code. These are not debts that are dischargeable.
Meaning that if he agrees to pay them, he's got to pay them. He can't run to bankruptcy court and say, Judge, I can't pay them.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. In fact, property settlements, one of the changes in the law is that property settlements as a result of a matrimonial actions are also not dischargeable. What I would suggest to your client is to have a consultation with a bankruptcy attorney and ask the questions that she needs answered. For example, has the divorce started? Is there a lot of debt? Is she going to be required or end up in a bankruptcy herself as a result of the split?
If they have joint credit cards, my understanding is, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but if a husband and wife have a joint credit card, and the wife goes bankrupt and the husband doesn't, he has to pay that credit card debt, correct?
Yes. Any debt that's jointly owed where one party does not file bankruptcy, the party who files will presumably get a discharge of that obligation, but it will fall on the co-signer.
One gets off the hook, the other one's stuck on.
Right. Now understand that if somebody's an authorized user does not make them obligated in our state.
Correct. All right.
Now, Paula, going back into hiring an attorney, what would you suggest to look for in a bankruptcy attorney?
Well, I certainly would use word of mouth. I would ask other people if they have bankruptcy is not something that people like to talk about. However, if you know somebody who's gone through the process, I would ask for a referral. There are many good bankruptcy attorneys out there, but I would make sure that I used somebody that practices in this area almost exclusively because this is a highly specialized field and attorneys really need to concentrate in this practice if I'm going to use them. The means test is very complicated. There were sweeping changes to this bankruptcy code 3 years ago, and if your attorney doesn't do this on a regular basis, they're doing both themselves and you a disservice.
Is there a publication requirement when you file bankruptcy? Does it have to be publicized?
No, it does not.
The records, however, are open to public access, correct?
Oh, sure. Any filing is public record, but it's not so easy to find. And there's a common misconception that if somebody files bankruptcy, it's going to be in the local newspaper, and that's not the case. There are some publications that do publish bankruptcies, but usually those are the larger or more sexy bankruptcies or corporate bankruptcies, maybe two or three a week. So there is no requirement.
Now, what exactly is credit counseling? We hear a lot about it, but what exactly is it?
Well, credit counseling, there are a lot of different components to credit counseling. General credit counseling will help people work on a budget. They'll look at your income versus your expenses. They'll look at the budget you spend. They'll make suggestions as how to cut your budget. And then they'll do an analysis with how much unsecured debt you have and see how much money you have left to pay it back. Bankruptcy credit counseling has another component besides those factors. They also explain the bankruptcy process to somebody seeking bankruptcy counseling.
And how are these agencies funded?
Many of them are funded through credit card company grants, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not reputable just because they're funded by credit card companies. But you have to be smart about it. My suggestion is to, when you're sitting down and doing the credit counseling, look at the budget and make sure you can really afford $200 a month for food on a family of seven.
Time for the news and weather. When we're back, we'll take a look at what's happening after you take the first step to file bankruptcy.
Fox News Radio, I'm Chris Quimby. A top White House economic advisor says parts of the country are in recession, but he believes they're doing the right thing to fix it.
How long is it going to take? Is it going to be effective? We believe it will be effective. We believe that it'll happen relatively quickly, but everybody has uncertainty about that, and I think that's what you're seeing reflected in the markets right now.
Ed Lazier on CNN's Late Edition talking about the financial rescue plan, saying it will be a few months before significant results are seen. Saturday Night Live getting a ratings boost with a little help.
Live from New York, it's Saturday night.
Sarah Palin showing up for a guest shot on the show that's unmercifully lampooned her since John McCain picked her as his running mate. The overnight Nielsen numbers showing more viewers than for any SNL in the last 14 years.
Fox News Radio's Chris Stanley and former Secretary of State Colin Powell endorsing Barack Obama. Fox News, we report, you decide.
10 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Low humidity, light winds. That means a chilly night for us tonight across the area, as we'll have clear skies. Get ready for temperatures down to 30 for the overnight hours. Then Monday's looking partly cloudy and a little warmer as we make it up to 58. Tuesday, we have a front heading our way, so that'll keep us cloudy. We've got some scattered showers heading back and temperatures of 52. From the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Terry Smith with the 810 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517 or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number 518-755-9517. Or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
We're back from the break, and tonight we've been talking about bankruptcy law. Before we get back into it, we have a caller, David from Clifton Park, has an interesting question of filing during a crisis. David,
yeah, what would happen if we end up, say, let's use a hypothetical situation or scenario or case. What would happen if we end up in a financial economic collapse in this country and we still owe on credit cards or we have loans? What would the creditors do? Would they write it off or would they still take legal action?
Make sure I understand your question. Are you talking about if you actually file a bankruptcy having this type of debt?
What I'm saying is if you don't file for bankruptcy and we do end up in a financial economic collapse to the point where we're not able to pay the bill off, say if it's a credit card or a personal loan, what would the creditors do in that situation? Would they write it off or would they still take legal action?
My educated assumption is going to be that they'll continue to take legal action. There are a number of credit agencies out there that will probably be willing to buy the debt. So let's assume you owe Joe's bank, and Joe's bank tries to collect from you, and you can't pay it. After a certain amount of time, Joe's bank wants that bad debt off its books. It's going to sell it to XYZ collection agency for a few cents on the dollar, and they're going to attempt to collect. And then when they can't, they may sell it again for a few cents on the dollar to ABC collection agency. So I don't think that an economic crisis is going to assist consumers in getting rid of their debt.
But it may force creditors to take less money.
I'm thinking is, I was talking to a financial advisor about three years ago from Latham. I happened to run into him at a bookstore, and we were having a conversation about the economy. And he told me at that time, statistically, that 75% to 80% of the population were in over their heads. So what I'm wondering is, percentage-wise, how many people are currently filing bankruptcy if the majority of the population are in over their head?
I don't necessarily know that the majority of the population is in over their head. The amount of people who file bankruptcy, it's not a majority of the consumers, actually. It's a minority. So I'm not really sure where those statistics came from.
All right. So you're saying, in essence, hypothetically, if we end up in a financial crises in this country, and say, for an example, if I had one credit card, say if I owed maybe $15,000, what would happen in that situation? Would they write it off, or would they still take legal action? Because the saying is, how can you get blood out of a stone?
But that situation actually exists today with just about every one of my clients. Most of the people who get to me have gotten to me from sort of trigger, and usually it's because a credit card company or collection agency has either been calling them nonstop or has actually sued them, obtained a judgment, and garnished their wages. I think in a financial crisis, what you might see more of than we see now is these agencies and banks willing to take settlements from you, take less than 100 cents on the dollar, maybe take 30-40%. Settlements.
And Paula, can't some of those credit counseling companies negotiate some of that debt for a person who has primarily this unsecured credit card debt?
It depends on the type of credit card, credit counseling agency. Most credit counseling agencies require 100% repayment to the credit cards at reduced payments, reduced interest.
And with this gentleman David's question, I've had some clients going through these difficulties during their divorce. Sometimes if they owe $15,000 on a credit card, they'll call the company up and say, look, I'm facing financial crisis. I'll give you $10,000 up front in 30 days. Some credit card companies will negotiate directly with the debtor that way, won't they?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, in your scenario, $10,000 and a $15,000 debt in 30 days, I think they would jump at. But something you need to do is you need to talk to your accountant about making a settlement like that, because the amount of money you save could potentially be deemed income and taxable as income.
Can't get away from it.
Well, David, I hope this answered your questions.
One quick other question. There's a financial guy that I listen to on a weekly basis, and he had mentioned, I don't know if this is rumor, but they were thinking about bringing back debtor's prison. Have you heard that?
Oh, my gosh, no. I can't imagine you would ever see that in this country again.
What is debtor's prison?
Many, many years ago, if you couldn't pay your debts, you were imprisoned. Or for example, maybe put in a stockade in the middle of this town square so everybody could see you until you paid off your debt. But you couldn't pay off your debt because you couldn't work because you were there in the stockade.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, David.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I want to go back to when you go in to hire an attorney, Paula. What type of information should you bring when you go in to meet with a bankruptcy attorney?
The bankruptcy code is pretty clear. You need to disclose all of your assets, your debts, your income, and your expenses. So when you go see a bankruptcy attorney for a consultation, it would behoove you and your attorney, the attorney whom you're going to see, that you have you have 6 months' worth of pay history, because, again, the means test flows from the last six months' worth of gross. If you're married, make sure you bring your spouses. It doesn't matter if you're not going to file jointly or don't want to file jointly. If you're living together, your spouse's information is as relevant as yours. Bring 4 years of tax returns, 6 or 7 months' worth of bank statements, credit card statements, personal loans, your credit report if you can obtain it. And by the way, you're entitled to a credit report once a year for free from the three major credit reporting agencies. You can go to www.annualcreditreport.com is one of the websites to do that. Make sure you know the payoff amounts on your car loans, on your mortgages. If you happen to know the value of your home, that's going to be important too. Bring copies of your tax bills.
And this isn't something an attorney could get for you. This is something the person would have to do prior to coming.
Yes, you should gather as much of that information as possible together. But what I tell my clients is if you don't have everything on the list, come in anyway, because maybe we can get certain information for you. Maybe we can get a copy of your deed. Maybe we can get a copy of your mortgage.
We have a caller, Steve from Gloversville. He actually has a question about Chapter 13, and I know we were actually going to be moving to that topic, so this is a great segue. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, I filed Chapter 13 like 4 years ago. And then the reason for it was because of an accident. It took me out of work for a year and a half and settled a lawsuit to do with it and paid it back 100% in full. How does that negatively or positively affect my credit compared to somebody that just paid back 10 cents on the dollar in a 13?
That's an excellent question. And the reason you filed a Chapter 13 versus a Chapter 7 was because you had an asset. And in a Chapter 7, you would have lost the right to negotiate that lawsuit, and you only would have been able to keep $7,500 of an exempt amount for that lawsuit. So by filing a 13, you preserved your right to negotiate and keep that lawsuit yours. And then you paid the amount over your exemption into your plan. And if that paid off your creditors in full, if there was anything left, you got it back. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yes, but just no one so far has been able to answer me. Does that, you know, am I in better shape credit-wise as far as my FICO score or whatever once the trustee pays everybody off in full than somebody that just paid 20 cents on the dollar in that scenario?
You should be. There's no hard and fast rule as to how it affects your FICO score. In fact, I don't even know how FICO scores are affected with regular type of credit situations. But what I can tell you is a 100% repayment plan is certainly better than a reduced percentage Chapter 13 and definitely better than a Chapter 7. On your credit report, years ago we used to have this conference and our judge used to be one of the speakers, and he would tell the audience that even a 100% bankruptcy repayment under a 13 is better than good credit with, for example, a repossession. So yes, that should help you better than a reduced percentage Chapter 13. Absolutely.
And it makes you feel a lot better.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I would suggest you do once it's all dispersed? And I don't know if it's been dispersed and if you've received your discharge.
In the process, and they said it could take up to 3 months, unfortunately.
Yeah, it can. And what I would suggest you do after 3 months is just call the trustee's office and ask how they're doing with it. They don't mind you doing that. Take a look. Once you get your discharge, pull your credit report and see if the debts listed that they've been paid. And if they don't, you can put your own consumer statement in there and explain that, yes, all of these debts were paid through your reorganization, and that should definitely help you.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was a great segue into the differences between Chapter 13 and Chapter 7. And when you go in to meet with your attorney, I guess the attorney is going to tell you basically or guide you into which chapter you should file for.
Absolutely. The first thing I look at is the 6 months' worth of gross income, because everything flows from that means test. And depending upon whether my clients are over the median income or under the median income, there might be certain things we can do to get you under if you're over, if you get a lot of overtime. So that's part of the pre-bankruptcy planning, because a Chapter 7 where you walk away from your debts and you're discharged in 4 to 6 months might be a better situation for you than a reorganization under Chapter 13.
To simplify it, Chapter 7, Paula, is you have no assets that you're worried about losing. So you go 100% bankrupt on what you're able to discharge or get rid of. Whereas a 13, you're trying to protect some assets. So you're actually going to pay back a certain amount of the debts, but maybe not 100%.
Exactly. Chapter 7, start to finish, is about 4 to 6 months. If you have an asset that's not protected, either liened by a creditor or exempt by state law. So, for example, you have a house that has a loan on it by a creditor, and the equity amount is less than $50,000 above and beyond what you owe, that's not an asset because New York State allows you a $50,000 homestead exemption. So you have a house where you're current, you have your car loan where you're current, and there's no equity in them above and beyond what you owe in the exemption amount. Yes, you can walk away from your unsecured debt. Taxes, for the most part, will not be dischargeable. Student loans are not dischargeable. Child support, maintenance, spousal obligations, property settlements, and a divorce are not dischargeable. Chapter 13, however, you can pay your creditors back under a repayment plan for anywhere between 3 and 5 years. What you pay back is determined by, one, if the means test tells us what the formula is and you can afford to pay that, two, what your assets are worth, or three, what you can afford.
Time for a short break. When we're back, we'll take a look at how you can reestablish your credit even after bankruptcy. Feel free to give us a call with any of your questions. To reach us, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY. If you don't have a chance to get in touch with us tonight, you can reach us at the Tully Rinke office all week at 518-218-7100.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, careersintransitionllc.com.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, portfolio manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
All right, Integral One Network Solutions. Tell me what they do again.
Well, they worked with us to design our new computer network. That's really made a difference. Helps us run our business better. They monitor everything 24/7 to keep it running smoothly. And they manage it all, so I don't have to hire an IT guy.
So when I hire Integral One, they manage my network so I can manage my business. Talk about peace of mind.
Integral One Network Solutions. Online at integral1.net. That's integral1.net. 464-4014.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property. But First Rate Funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable rate mortgage, First Rate Funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First Rate Funding, New Carter Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700. And please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
We're back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I want to take a caller. We have John from Colony who has an interesting question in regard to child support and bankruptcy. John, you're on the air.
Hey, it's great to be on. When is there going to be a College Chris and Val show?
I don't know. I think they're both off next week, so probably not for another 2 weeks or so.
I think those are the best parts of your show. Hey, well, I got you. How do I get rid of alimony and child support? Can I file for bankruptcy so I don't have to pay that anymore?
Nope.
Why not?
Because the bankruptcy code specifically accepts from discharge domestic support obligations, and domestic support obligations includes child support, alimony, maintenance.
That sucks.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
And John, you don't mess around with those. They have pretty strict laws about people that don't pay child support.
Right, and the bankruptcy code will not help you. Now, you can, in under Chapter 13, reorganize your back child support, but it's given priority status, and the receiver of the child support is entitled to receive before anybody else.
How do I do that again?
Back child support can potentially be reorganized under a Chapter 13, but you must also stay current with your post-petition, which means after the filing child support, or your bankruptcy will fail.
Can I get rid of alimony that way, too?
You can reorganize it. You cannot get rid of it.
Hey, I like that first call about punching the banker. I'm to that, too.
All right. Thanks for the call, John.
Paula, I wanted to take you over to something that we hear about when you file a bankruptcy called an automatic stay. What is that, and how does that help the person who's filing?
An automatic stay is an absolutely wonderful statutory component of the bankruptcy code. Whenever you file a bankruptcy, the moment that that bankruptcy is uploaded to the court, and uploaded because it's all electronic filing, you are protected from debt collection. You're protected from phone calls, lawsuits, garnishments, seizures, foreclosures. If you have a foreclosure at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, if I upload your petition at 9:59 before that gavel falls, that foreclosure sale is stopped.
Well, let me say, I owe CityCard money, and they're calling me every day on the phone, and I file for bankruptcy. They don't know I filed for bankruptcy. How do I get them to stop calling me?
They will know that you filed for bankruptcy. They will receive a notice usually within about a week of the filing. But what we tell our clients is, we'll give us a call. We'll give you the case number. As soon as we file, you have a case number. When they call, you have them, give them our name and number, and we'll be more than happy to tell them that you filed, or you can give them your case number. The automatic stay is a wonderful component because it gives you relief from your debt. Creditors can move to lift that automatic stay, lift that protection under certain circumstances. One of the things that a Chapter 13 will do for you is help you get your house out of foreclosure and help you keep your home. Same thing with your vehicle, help you pay for your vehicle. You can actually strip second, third, fourth mortgages that are completely unsecured. If your first mortgage is more than the house is worth, you can cram down a car payment if you owe more on the car than it's worth and the loan is more than 910 days old. You can actually reduce the payment to what the actual value is at a reduced interest rate. So Chapter 13 has some really nice components, and you can save your house, your car, and your other assets.
As a small business owner, is there any way of protecting yourself from someone maybe who has filed for bankruptcy? I mean, if someone was to come in and they want to place an order or something with a small business, is there some way I can find out, has this person filed for bankruptcy protection?
Yeah, bankruptcy records are a matter of public record, and you can find out by going down to the bankruptcy court clerk's office and checking the database. Any attorney who has access to the court's system can check that for you. You have to be signed up, and there is a charge for it, but it's nominal.
Now, what about let's say someone has successfully filed for bankruptcy? Doesn't matter which chapter, but they've done it and they've been approved, and they are, as you've used the term, discharge. What effect is that going to have? I get this question all the time from clients. What's going to happen to my credit? And I never know exactly what to tell them except to call you.
Well, bankruptcy is reportable on your credit report for 10 years. But that doesn't mean that you won't get credit for 10 years. What we generally see is within 2 to 3 years of receiving a discharge, your bankruptcy is what we call seasoned. In other words, if the rest of your credit history post-bankruptcy filing is good, you've made your mortgage payments on time or your car payments on time, then you probably will be seeing that your credit is rehabilitated. Once you file bankruptcy, I'm not surprised anymore, although every once in a while something will happen. One of my clients will tell me something that will surprise me. But credit card companies will send an awful lot of credit card solicitations. Just be really wary of the type of credit that you obtain after filing bankruptcy. Be smart. You use good judgment. Look at the debt. Look at the interest rate. You can obtain what's called a secured credit card. You can go to your bank or one of the major credit card companies and ask them for a small credit line, say $200-$400. Put that money up as collateral, that they hold it so they're protected in case you default, and use that on a regular basis, and you'll start rebuilding your credit.
Now, that topic actually reminds me of something we were discussing earlier as far as whose fault is a bankruptcy. Is it the spender or the lender?
Well, I think culpability exists on the part of both. I think that there, unfortunately, is not enough debtor education. I think that credit card companies are merciless in how they offer credit. To take college campuses, going to college, you go to orientation, how many tables are set up from credit card agencies? If you fill out the application, you get a free CD or a Frisbee or a T-shirt. And unfortunately, for example, in this example, students oftentimes are not educated as to the cost of credit. Let me give you an example that may surprise you. Having a debt of $1,000, a balance on a credit card with an interest rate of 21%, and I'll use that interest rate because that's the average of the department store cards generally. If you merely make a minimum payment and don't charge on a balance of $1,000, it will take 7.5 years at a minimum, at the earliest, to pay off that debt, and will cost at least $2,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not disclosed at all on the when you get your statement every month. It doesn't tell you that. It tells you what the minimum payment is, but it doesn't tell you if you make the minimum payment, you're going to pay us $1,000 in interest.
Precisely. And one of the disappointing features of this bankruptcy code, before it actually passed a few years back, some of the legislators wanted to try to soften the blow because the sweeping changes really were pro-creditor and not consumer. And one of the amendments proposed was to put on the statements precisely this, saying if you only paid your minimum balance at this amount of money owed, it will take you X amount of time to pay it off. And that amendment was actually knocked down. Voted no. So there's not enough education. So if you ask me, the culpability, I think, is more on the lenders than on the consumers. But there is a program called CARE, Credit Abuse Resistance Education. It's a free program where members of the Capital Region Bankruptcy Bar Association will go into schools and talk to 11th and 12th grade, usually economic classes, and give this presentation as a way to get students who are going to college ready and educated on the cost of credit.
But Paula, I have to presume there's some benefit to a credit card company. In other words, it can't be so many people going bankrupt that it isn't worthwhile for these credit card companies to be giving out credit to people that are having trouble paying it back.
It's beneficial to have a credit card. But look at the terms of the credit card. Look at the default interest rate. Look at the annual fee. Look at the terms and conditions. Oftentimes, I'll see credit clients come to see me. Say, you know, I've been current on all of my debt, but I missed this one, and it was a mistake. And as a result, all of my credit cards that were at 9% are now up to 25. I've actually seen them at 35% APR. You say, but I didn't miss them. Why? Because it's called a domino effect, and it's allowed, and that often brings people to see me because they cannot make the minimums anymore.
What I find outrageous is you get these credit cards, and when you read the fine print, it says, you know, you're going to get a 7% introductory rate, and then all of a sudden it jumps to 21%. I mean, to me, that's just very outrageous. I mean, you're preying on someone who's thinking they're getting a 7% interest rate, and then in the fine print buried on page 23 is it says, well, the introductory rate is only good for 6 months, and then it jumps to 21%.
And a little further down in that fine print, it says if you miss a payment, if you're a few days late, it goes to the default rate as well.
Interesting.
Well, how do these credit card companies that offer 0% interest rates make out? Are they just hoping that you'll transfer what you owe onto their cards and then stick with them and then the rates go jacked up?
Yes, because when they offer the 0% in the transfers, there's usually a fee affiliated with the transfer. And somebody who has a lot of outstanding credit card debt who's making minimum payments timely is the best customer, and they are going to be inundated with credit card applications.
Now, what are some myths in regard to bankruptcy? I mean, that's something I know that there's a lot of myths out there.
Well, one major myth is that all debts are wiped out in a bankruptcy, and that's not so. You've heard us talk about child support, alimony, maintenance. Those things are not dischargeable, nor are property settlements or student loans for the most part. If you have obtained a debt by any type of fraud or if you have cause malicious some injury to somebody with some malicious conduct, those debts are not dischargeable. Another myth is that everybody will know that you filed for bankruptcy. That's not true. It's public record, but you really have to go looking for it to know somebody has filed.
That's it for us this Sunday. I'd like to give a special thanks to both Paula and Barb for joining us tonight. And yet, if you didn't have a chance to reach us this evening, we can be reached all week at Tully Rinke at 518-218-7100. We'll be here next Sunday night, and we're bringing in a special show where we'll be joined in the studio with two judicial candidates running for a seat in the New York State Supreme Court, Judges Anthony Carpinello and Patrick McGrath. Have a good night.